Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Kangas, and each week on the show, we will talk about how to take flight and follow your dreams as a solopreneur architect. In this episode, I talk with Andrea Hamel-Wolak, co-founder of HW Squared Design, a two-person practice she runs with her husband, John. Over the past 12 years, Andrea has built a firm defined by good design for everyone, adaptability, and flexibility. With roots as an entrepreneurial family, she's learned the essentials of providing architectural services that are buildable and beautiful, that solve her clients' needs. Her firm is highly strategic in leveraging new technology to manage projects efficiently. Andrea's firm can be equated to a raven, a bird known for its intelligence, efficiency, and even its unique collaboration. Ravens are master problem solvers, using tools and even working side by side with wolves to achieve shared goals. Andrea serves her clients with quick communication and strong contractor relationships. We discuss how she built her business around her family so she can be fully engaged in her children's activities. Her quick communication habits and agile mindset have enabled her firm to take on a variety of projects. Each project reflects their clever design strategies and pairs an aesthetic and logistics. Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I am your host, Katie Kangas, and today we are talking with Andrea Hamel-Wolak about her firm, HW2 Design, if I get that right.
HW squared.
HW squared, of course, it's a mathematical formula. You got to get that. So Andrea Hamel-Wolak of HW Squared Design, and we're going to talk about how her practice runs. And welcome, Andrea. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your practice?
We are a two-person firm. I actually have the practice with I refer to him as my partner, but he's also my husband. We have been in business for a little over 12 years now. It was sort of a goal of mine since middle school to have my own practice. Definitely has morphed into something significantly different than when I was a middle schooler, high schooler. But every day is different and we enjoy it.
What about having your own business attracted you at 12 years old?
I came from a family of entrepreneurs. So that's probably where it came from. Dad's side of the family had multiple brothers and they all had their own business. And then my dad took over the family business, then had a little hiatus, but then started his own company. My mom has always sort of, we'll say, dabbled in side hustles. So the whole concept of being self-employed was not scary whatsoever. I also looked at it as a freedom to sort of set my own schedule. Initially, my thought would be I'd be a stay-at-home mom and, you know, design one or two houses on the side. I quickly learned that I was not really stay-at-home mom material, even though I like domestic duties, but I need a break from the kiddos. And so, but I would say, you know, definitely having the freedom of, you know, adjusting my schedule that, you know, the kids need me midday, then I'm like up some time early Saturday morning kind of thing. I also worked at a lot of firms that I learned a lot at, but I also learned a lot of things of how maybe not to run a business. I went through two mergers. I pretty much rode the sinking ship on one business, closing their doors and then merging. So I've sort of seen it all in, I guess, 20 plus years that I've been practicing. And so I decided, you know, 12 years ago, I'm going to do my own thing.
I love it. And you mentioned that because you saw so many entrepreneurs, you weren't scared of becoming an entrepreneur. What do you think are some of those fears that you avoided that hold others back?
Probably I was okay with the unknowns of like, hey, I've got some project work now, but I don't know what my project work is in 9 months, 12 months, you know, 24 months from now. I just trusted that if you are a good person and did good work, that the work would come. And we definitely have been blessed with that throughout the years. Sort of knowing, and also I was taught very young that you can try to know everything, but you never do. And so if you don't, then find people that are experts in those areas and ask them for advice on it. And also advice my dad gave me was, you know, is it, if you're not having fun, then you need to change it kind of thing. My first step into the LLC entrepreneur world was starting a food truck while I was still self-employed by a larger company. It was Started it in 2010 during the recession. So looked at it as a backup plan, since 50% of architects were being unemployed at that time. And there were two of us in our house, so there was a possibility. So I would say starting with a food truck at that, we'll say low level as a part-time hustle, took some of the fear away as well. I mean, and maybe sometimes I was too naive to know that I should be scared about it. I'm just like, this is what I'm doing. Here we go. Jump in.
I like that there's this fun aspect to it as well, that there's a playfulness with the work instead of just the rigid, this is business, this is the books structure of it all, but having fun with it. That's a great encouragement from your father. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, you know, he's an engineer, so he's very square box, one box at a time individual, but he definitely, you know, there should be humor, there should be fun. You should enjoy what you do. And, you know, and definitely that's passed on to our kids. I've got a, family members that don't like their jobs and regret going to work. And my kids are scared of picking their own career because they don't want to be in that boat of, you know, despising their job every day. So
that's a different fear. Definitely a real concern for some of us. Mm-hmm. So as you went through different offices before you started your own, what were some of the influences before you said, this is what my firm is going to be? What kind of reflections did you have about your personal strengths and the hopes and dreams you had for your business?
I guess one early on straight out of school was to not be intimidated by others. You know, it was actually the wife of my boss, and she was just, she came in every day, demanded we all eat lunch together. She brought the children in. You know, she quit her full-time job, but plus had two nannies to take care of three boys. And she was just, we had nothing in common. I couldn't relate to her. You know, she just played that sort of helplessness that I never understood. It was never given to me. I was also, you know, yes, I'm a female, but I was raised of like, here are your chores. They are not gender specific.
So was she trying to build a culture in that?
I don't know what she was doing. She was just being a busybody.
Okay.
I think, you know, and so you're like, you know, I learned that in some ways, I guess that would be keeping, you know, like not having somebody come have lunch with you every single day that isn't part of the firm kind of thing. Like I knew that was her husband's job. She sort of published the culture, but she didn't really do anything besides be a busybody kind of thing. So that was sort of one aspect of, you know, I'm very upfront that I'm a mom and I have a family, but on the same sense, it's like, nope, I'm here. I'm working right now. Let's see. Okay. So what things I should have backed up. Okay. So when I told my dad I was going to be an architect, he said, you need to know how to build. You can't just know what those lines on the paper mean. So I actually had 18 months of construction experience done before I graduated from college. And I tell that to any young person that is in the field, go out and put your work boots on and get dirty so you know those parts and pieces. Then sort of my second job when we were out in New York City, great boss, really, really tough boss. You know, definitely had some anxiety of not pleasing him or, you know, failing at what I was doing, but he was good. He, you know, whatever you got knocked down, he told you to stand up, dust off and keep going. Having that construction experience was great because the guys in the field saw a young female come onto the job site and she doesn't know what she's talking about. And they were trying to, we'll say, pressure me into the easy way out on things. You know, and I just looked at him and said, you know what? I have pulled miles of wire in conduit. It is not fun. I understand surface mounted conduit. Would you like me to come back tomorrow? I'm like, I am not in my work clothes today. I can come back tomorrow and help you pull the conduit. I know, as my boss wants, I'll take a day off of work. You know, and very quickly their tone changed like, oh, sorry. Never mind. We can do that. So I think having those life experiences has also helped me. You know, and then I would say my second boss in New York, understanding that forgiveness of like, hey, you did it wrong, you know, being able to say that, because sometimes us from the Midwest have a hard time confronting people on doing things wrong, but it's okay. Let's try it again. Please keep these things in mind next time moving forward. You know, he also gave me a ton of responsibility. He let somebody go that was 5 years my senior, handed me the project, said it was 2 weeks behind schedule. And I was now the construction administration person and figure out the drawings and get it up to speed. Your meetings are Monday morning. It's like, oh boy, here we go. So, you know, I was very fortunate with that sort of accelerated pace as well. So, you know, that would sort of taught me to like look at who's around you and don't put age or experience. Sometimes there's people that maybe haven't had those opportunities that are just waiting to move forward. And then when we moved back to Minnesota, the firm there, like, love the culture, love the people. It's been a while, but, you know, for some ways they still get together for work family reunions. That it was just a great bunch of people to work together. And I realized how important it is to be working with people you like and are comfortable around. You know, and that boss, he sort of struggled with the shiny thing and jumped from one thing to one thing and sometimes made poor business decisions or sort of dumped money at things that maybe were not a sound investment. And that sort of, well, in some ways, got them overextended on promises. And, you know, some of that just started to eat away at, you know, where things were at. And so that's one thing, sort of learning of, like, you know, take a step back, take a deep breath, sleep on it, weed the garden, whatever your downtime is to subconsciously think things through, was also important that I learned. And then, you know, that was a company that ended up closing their doors. There was a merge in there. And, that's about the time I had my first child. And when I came back from maternity leave, I very much was reassessing my life and my goals. And then I got to what I thought was my goal of employment, of working for residential architecture. And I realized I really liked the diversity of doing corporate work and residential work. And so that was sort of the final, like, trigger to, like, okay, it's time to, you know, you got to where you thought your goal was since you were a middle schooler, and it isn't what you hoped it would be. So let's reevaluate, and what do you want to do? And so, you know, I try to take, I'm sure there are many, many more subconscious little things I've learned out through the years, but those are sort of some big ones that stick out when people sort of ask about my career path of how I got to where I'm at.
That's a fantastic summary of so many lessons in such a short, condensed time to have 8 years of practice and then start your own. It's similar to my path in how long I was kind of in other firms, but it was a scary time to take that leap until I realized that it wasn't a leap. It was testing your wings and you just plan for the risk and it becomes less scary then. I am wondering about, you mentioned residential and commercial as the types of clients and projects you serve. Could you put more of a boundary around that? What specifically do you look for in the types of clients and projects that you take on?
We just sort of joke and say, yes, whoever pays us. Definitely are feeling we're more established, so we could be more selective. It really comes down to working with good people, good humans. You know, I really enjoy, I get teased on, we joke and call them charity jobs. They're low budget, they're mom and pop projects. You know, somebody's has a business idea and is finally going to move to a brick and mortar or have a food truck and are moving to a brick and mortar. You know, for my sort of my restaurant world or commercial world. For residential, I'm very thoughtful on the amount of square footage people need. You know, always the cheapest square footage is the square footage not built. So a lot of our residential jobs are remodels or small additions. And I try to think about every square foot. You know, how do we use the space? Can it be a multitasker? You know, we get into the industrial commercial world of, you know, shops and like, you know, automotive shops or storage facilities, or, you know, like a rental company, big warehouse space, you know, not glamorous whatsoever. But there are also people that are like us, small business owners that are needing to expand, and they need an architect to do the work.
And you also have a specialty in restaurants.
Yeah.
Which is probably informed by your food truck experience as well.
Yes. I would say restaurant work sort of continues to check the box of not owning a restaurant. We love food. So we're always really excited to help people. And I had a food manager license when I had my food truck. So I understand some of the back end business, you know, operation side of things. I also catered when I was in college quite a bit. So, you know, I've got that sort of, okay, here's your idea of, we'll say you're a cottage food license person and now you want to be in a brick and mortar. Well, this is, you're changing your food license. This is changing how things are operating. And so, yeah, I enjoy doing restaurant work. In larger restaurants, we team up with a restaurant consultant to help with selection of equipment and layout. If it's a small coffee shop or I've got a client that knows all of the equipment he wants, then I do the layout work for it. But yeah, I enjoy learning about their food, seeing them succeed, you know, how they use the space. And I always try to take a step back and say, let's talk about this from the people working in the kitchen. How do we get food out the door? Let's talk about this as staff bringing the food to the tables. And then also let's look at the customers coming into the building. What do they see? How are they greeted? How do they sit down? You know, what are their vision points? So I really, you know, try to make sure that the owner of the restaurant business takes a step back and thinks about all the different types of people that come through the space and to make sure that everybody uses it well. You know, you could have a fabulous restaurant and disgruntled employees because the kitchen doesn't operate well. So then you got high staff turnover and, you know, that's not healthy from a business side. Or you can have a great food, great clients or great employees, but for whatever reason, the people aren't comfortable in the space. So then they don't come to eat your food and you're not successful. So I try to look at all aspects, you know, wear all the hats, step in all the shoes.
And you really did. You had your boots on the ground doing the restaurant work as that food manager. And so just like your construction experience, the side interest, you've brought it into your practice and helped it inform and improve the design that you're able to offer. I love hearing that. So how do you find these ideal clients who align with your mission of serving mom and pop? They're not all easy, clean projects, but you've got a good system in place for serving them. And so how are you finding them?
Luck is really the only way I can explain it. You know, we started off consulting back with a couple firms while we were getting things figured out. Then...
Could you describe what consulting means?
Oh, yep. So it was John, my partner, mainly did that. So he was the BIM or Revit manager at a larger firm. And so we sort of offered as sort of a, we'll say a side hustle on our startup to go into firms and help them learn the Revit software, the BIM software, but not just classes. You're learning it as you're doing your project. So the firms didn't have any downtime. So he came in as a project architect, worked with the team, taught them how to use Revit, and on the same time got them that set of documents out the door. And then on some jobs, they needed some more help. So then I would come into, you know, less in the teacher role, a little more in the production role. So we did that for a handful of firms in the Twin Cities area. As we were getting started, we've been asked since and are a little busier, so we haven't been able to do it as much, but, you know, we'll help with Revit template setups and things like that for other companies. For getting work, I really don't know. You know, a lot of our work comes from general contractors that we got paired with from the start, and they enjoyed working with us and we enjoyed working with them. In Minnesota, a lot of people tend to go to general contractors before architects for smaller jobs. And so, you know, we've got a handful of general contractors. As soon as they have a project, they give us a call, say, hey, you know, can you put in a proposal on this? Or, you know, we don't have an architect. I think you'll be a good match with this client. Word of mouth, and a lot of repeat clients that also word of mouth pass our name along.
Andrea, that's so awesome to hear, building it off of those relationships with contractors. I think I've got your bird. So I think you're a bit like a raven. And we kind of knew this before we started this conversation, but I read into it even more. But ravens will actually co-hunt with wolves. And if you think of the wolf as the contractor who's getting these projects, the ravens are a key part of that relationship. They will see a wounded animal and they will make a noise and the wolves will come in that direction. Or wolves will be pursuing a prey and ravens will get to enjoy the feast with them. And so if you think of these wounded animals as the projects, the problems that you're trying to solve for clients, you're working right alongside those contractors to clean those projects up and deliver that to the client.
Yes, that works. Maybe a little morbid with hunting, but also I understand your, you know, analogy of working together as a team and you've got an end goal on everything.
Yes, and sometimes it gets messy, but it's necessary. You need your professionals to help you clean up the messy things.
Yeah.
It's always hard when we're like sole practitioners and we don't like just sell our services. We don't necessarily just market our services. We find projects in other ways that are better aligned with our other skills and talents. And so by building those relationships, you're leveraging other personal strengths towards getting work, which is your personal experience,
ravens are also very smart, very, very smart animals. And they're one of the only birds that like use tools. I'm kind of using them interchangeably because they're very closely related.
Yeah.
But they will use tools to get things out of jars. Or if water in a jar is too low, they will put pebbles in to get that water to raise up. And that just reminds me of these back end systems that you have in place with your husband, that you have built strong technical tools to be able to deliver projects very quickly. Also, you have one of the best response times of anyone I know. You are always on top of communications. And I think that has helped you just be really smart with the partners that you take on and really reactive to the projects that you're managing. And it's really impressive to see. So I think this is a really good bird for you. I know they're not super showy, but they do have color in their feathers. It's kind of like a muted, it's almost an iridescent when you shine the light on them. Mm-hmm. Then you see those extra colors in the black. But most of the time, it seems understated. And seeing some of your designs, maybe they're understated, but they're also really well executed in how they've been thought through this holistic process that you bring to restaurants and also to, I know you just recently did a house that your parents' house or your...
No, my parents' house. Yeah. Yep. Their Asian place. Yeah. It was definitely a workhorse. And, you know, during the like Homes by Architect tour, there were people that, you know, like we didn't really have the laundry room, workroom on the tour, but people are like, whoa, what's that space? And it's like, well, you know, everybody wants this blank room to create and do things. And, you know, and that's what they got. And also being very minimalistic of, you know, factory feel plus mid-century modern merging together, you know, how do you sort of have that real raw industrial space with, you know, sort of the warmth that comes from mid-century modern? And I am very, we'll say, practical in my nature. So that makes sense with your selection of bird.
It's a beautiful juxtaposition. It's a juxtaposition between something that's complex, but you've simplified it so much that it's so easy to work with. And I love that you're calling a house a workhorse. I think that identifies like, that's what I need my house to be. I need it to be that workhorse. I need my office space to be my workhorse so that I can just get in there and do the things. So I love that description for it too. And I think ravens are there ready to get in there and get it done. They also mate for life. So you've been with John pretty long time.
Yeah, that's true. We are the old married couple.
That's great. Well, Andrea, I'm curious what three words you would use to describe your firm's unique approach.
This was hard. Can I do three concepts if they're short little statements, or do we
Absolutely.
Need to stick with three words? Okay.
I take it anyway. Yep.
So, you know, sort of from a previous person taking his tagline of good design for everyone, adaptable, you know, either you could say scattered or flexible for, you know, sort of, I guess, you know, sort of being able to pivot and change as things change or, you know, COVID, that was a fast change for a lot of people of how they did business. So I would say those are our three of good design for everyone, being adaptable and flexible, but you could say scattered instead because sometimes that's how my brain operates between all of our projects.
Is that following the shiny objects?
Somewhat, yes. or the fire that needs to be put out.
There we go. That's what blackened the crow's feathers in the Native American story.
Yeah,
it's getting too close to the fire. What advice would you give to someone who is just thinking about starting their own business? And I had the benefit of getting to ask you those questions when I was considering starting my own business 5 years ago. What sort of advice helped you take flight? And we've covered some of it from your family, but what specifically would you tell someone else thinking about starting their own business?
You'll never have, we'll say, every single business plan and idea and form and paperwork, or, you know, sometimes banks require like a whole like written business plan and statements and all of this. Like, you'll never have that perfect. You'll never have that figured out. I know there's people that like will dwell on not having that document perfect. But it can be there as a guideline, but it's by no means what you're going to follow, because things change your ideas of where you want to go change, and the world changes too. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns out there. I think you need to be a person that's okay knowing there are unknowns and being able to be flexible or pivot when those unknowns present themselves. I think you also need to have sort of a sense of knowing who you are, being comfortable with who you are, so that you can, if you need to take a step back and say, hey, this is sort of going a path I don't really want, I don't like, you know, things are changing, you know, relationships are changing, you know, it could be personal because you're working too much. It could be broader than that, that you're with a group of people that maybe are doing work that isn't really, we'll say, checking your mission box or what makes you tick kind of thing. Also, understand that you don't know it all and be humble and listen to advice, ask for advice, find your network of people that are there for you and want to support you. You know, if that's family, if that's colleagues, if it's, a best friend from grade school, you know, just anybody that's out there that, you know, it like raising a family, I would say starting out on your own is sort of like you need that village to help you get going too. And remember to thank those people that have helped you along the way. It can be a quick phone call, it can be a note card, you know, taking them out for lunch, you know, whatever it is. In some ways being humble too, that there are always things that you can learn as you go through it. Let's see what else, you know, and sometimes just go for it. And, you know, one of the pieces of advice I got from an older architect was he wanted to do his own thing. And he's like, you know, 30 is the best time, age of 30, that range is the best time. He's like, I did it. I tried it for a couple of years and I decided it wasn't for me. And so he went back to the corporate world. We know somebody else that has started out on his own about the same time and decided it wasn't for him and went back to the corporate world. So, and don't consider it a failure. Consider it, he did another job opportunity and he decided this job wasn't a good match. It'd be no different than, you know, switching workplaces as well and deciding not, hey, nope, this isn't the right place to be. I need to find a different place to work. So.
What a great entrepreneur response, but this isn't the end. There's more out there, but it's not that failure. It's just the next step in your journey. I love that. I am actually curious about, specifically because so much of your marketing is based on contractors and that contractor relationship. You have this experience based on your dad's advice to get boots on the ground and learn the things. But what are ways that you're making that a valuable relationship? What are ways that architects who have never talked to a contractor or maybe don't have good relationships with contractors right now, what are ways to turn those relationships around and to build a genuine connection that helps create this cohesive relationship for completing projects?
I'm going to quick backtrack. So when I was a senior in high school, I did a mentor connection program and I first half of the year was independent study on mid-century modern architecture. I love my clean, crisp lines. During that research part of architecture, and people did whatever their career was in, you know, so we had somebody that wanted to be a mortician, somebody else that wanted to be a vet, you know, so we were a very diverse group of kiddos that met with this one teacher. And I learned that, you know, we have a three-legged stool of the architecture project. The goal is this building, the space, the volume or vessel that you're going to be in. You've got the owner with the idea and the funds. You've got the general contractor that's going to draw it. And then you've got us that's going to design it and manage expectations, you know, figure out how to communicate with the client to get it into that form. And it's usually a different type of communication with the general contractor to get it built. So I look at the process as a three-legged stool. You take any of those out and the project gets messy really, really fast. So communication is huge. And I think a lot of times architects sometimes can get an ego of like, hey, general contractor, you don't know what you're doing kind of thing. And they maybe don't know the history of why you got to that space design detail. But you also need to understand that you maybe don't totally understand how the material or the tools work to get that detail achieved. With my, you know, boots on the ground experience, I'm able to be sometimes like, hey, I know this detail is horrible. I'm like, I I keep a thought about it lots. You know, I had trouble modeling the 3D since we work in a 3D modeling program. Like, let me know if you want me to come out the site while you're laying this out and talk through it with the guys that are going to be building it. You know, and that's one thing is just to come down to their scale. And I always like thank the guys when I'm out on the site. Like, I don't care if you're sweeping the floors, welding the beams together, or pouring the concrete. Thank you for being there. Thank you for working on the project for the client. I look at everybody as a team member. You know, and it's not, there's times that you need to be firm and say, hey, no, this is really the detail we want, you know, or this is the reasoning, this is this way. I've spent 6 months with the client discussing this. We need to do it this way. This is why. Understand it's not typical and not the norm and a little more time and money, but this is why. And usually if you take the time to explain that, I would say going back to if they're a good human, they'll stop, they'll listen, be like, oh, okay. And then sometimes I say, hey, this is my detail. I'm not 100% sure if this is the best way to do it or not. What's your guys' thoughts? You know, like, can I chat with the millworker? Can I chat with the steel guy? Like, does this make sense? Or have they done a similar detail that's a little easier to build for this reason? And can we talk through that? You know, and I think having some of that experience or, you know, say, hey, Mr. Contractor, could I come walk the site with you, you know, once a week for an hour or two in the morning before I have to be in the office just to start seeing how things go together. And I've been that way. I'm like, hey, I've never seen that installed. Can I swing out when you're doing that install? And also, you know, we have do a lot of projects ourselves. We design our own stuff and then build as much of it as we can. So like we'd never done ICF insulated blocks. So it's like, cool, we're going to learn how to do this. You know, and learned a lot and realized some of the challenges of it. So those are sort of different avenues that I take. You know, communicating, you know, being respectful of others and, you know, having that conversation. And totally know there's sometimes personalities that don't get along or maybe the damage has sort of been done on feelings being hurt. But take what you've learned and apply it to your next project of like, hey, let's start over. Let's have a fresh start. Let's get all on the same page. You know, we're all a leg of the stool to get this space done. We need to communicate and get there.
And you are just so natural at how you communicate. Is there anything that you're doing to remind yourself like, hey, wait a minute, it's been a year since I've talked to this contractor, or I remember we just finished this project 6 months ago. It'd be good to connect. Are there things that you're doing to reach back to contractors you've worked with in the past?
I do. Usually, if we've worked with them, we continue to work with them. Very rarely do we have ones that sort of, you know, we'd like to work with again and sort of fall off the radar. I do like some of the subs we've utilized for our own projects because we knew that what we wanted for our finished look was beyond our skill set. Concrete is an example. We wanted a really nice floor for the concrete for the shop we're making, and we knew that we couldn't get there on our own. So we, you know, asked for recommendations. So I actually had the subcontractor's direct email. And on another project, we had a challenging site that there was a slope and a valley that didn't get picked up on the topography of the survey. And so it was some design build of trying to get the water away from the building. And I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, shoot. I never talked to a subcontractor. I never saw him again. So luckily I had his email. So I reached out and be like, hey, thank you so much. You did a great job on this concrete work. I know it was challenging and we're all a little scary at one point of trying to get the water the right direction, but you did a great job. You know, so I do that. Or sometimes I'll send an email to the general contractor, be like, hey, you know, I forgot to thank your guys last time I was on site. They're doing a great job kind of thing. So, you know, it's just remembering to say thank you. You know, if you see him again, or if it's sending an email out of like, hey, can you pass this on to your team?
I think that's a wonderful reminder, or even just call to action, because when I think of offices I've been in and I've been like kind of intimidated by the construction administration part, it's because that person is usually on the phone yelling and it's usually not polite language. Yeah. And to switch that relationship, because you're right, that three-legged stool, we have the same goal in mind. If we can keep that in mind, it's not just everyone fighting for their own interests. If we can keep that cohesive element, and an architecture can be a real key in that relationship with the client and the contractor. And so to be the one to set that tone just sounds like a much more pleasant work environment for everyone involved.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like I've had some contractors that were, you know, sort of yelly football coachy, and I'm just like, you know what? I don't like to be yelled at. So you can change your voice and then we can have this conversation again. But, you know, and that's really hard and scary to stand up and say, but there's times of just like, no, this, nope, you're done. You're done yelling. I'm not, you know, can we work through this? Or when you can use your inside voice, we'll finish this conversation, which sometimes makes them mad. Sometimes it makes them take a deep breath. And, you know, and there's, I think there's a lot of, we'll say like everything, there's stereotypical or prejudged opinions. And I've read this, my dad gave me this listening book, I think about the time we started our own firm. All the graphics were like from the 70s, like, you know, bell bottoms and big hair kind of thing. And, but the main thing that I took away from that book is sometimes you have to reset your mindset of listening every time you meet that person again. Like maybe something was said that was hurtful or annoyed you, or you just get this prejudged opinion of like, that person's an idiot. Sometimes you need to like say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go in with a fresh slate. I'm not going to take any of that previous baggage with me. Let's try this again. And, you know, and sometimes it works and sometimes it comes out of just like, that is not a good person to have in my life, but we'll get through this and then we'll move on. But I try to really remind people sometimes, like, are you truly listening, or is the words just sort of coming in and going out and you're not truly listening to what the client is saying, what the general contractor is saying, what the architect's saying? And, you know, take a deep breath. Sometimes we all need to like reset our thought process. And anybody with kids knows that, you know, when you're in those toddler stages, you know, you wake up and remember yesterday being such a tough day, and you sometimes start out with that opinion where, you know, the toddler wakes up and they totally forgot what they did yesterday that made you so mad. So, you know, it's stepping back, taking a deep breath, saying, okay, let's try this again today. Let's make sure that I am truly listening. You know, is it reading the email properly? Is it hearing the words in the meeting of what the goal is or what the problem is?
This is great insight to the kind of manager that you sound like. You step into that role and just a way of managing the project with the bigger picture in mind, but also recognizing people are people and meeting them where they're at. And so it's a great balance of holding people accountable to a high standard. I love that you communicate the details to people when there is friction, to have that advice, or even if you're not sure about a detail, asking those questions. So I'm just loving this overall view of what an architecture manager can be with a project. It's very fun. Nice work, Andrea.
as my father always says, and I feel the same, well, we just bump along and get it done.
Bump along. That's adorable. Well, just to kind of dive into like your personal dreams, what is the balance that you've sought in having your own firm and raising your own family and creating this holistic vision of life? Because it's kind of, you can make it whatever you want it to be. And so it's the power of you designing the life that you want to have. And so I know there's tons of things you do with your kids and fun projects you do on the side. I'm just curious how that balance looks and feels for you and how you've come to that vision.
It is a chaotic hot mess, and I need to learn to say no. I think it comes to that I enjoy doing lots of different things. I enjoy learning how to do lots of things, and I'm a hands-on learner. Like reading a book to learn how to do it, no thank you. You know, put me out there and I'll do it that way. Our first kiddo we had while I was still in a firm, we decided we were going to start our own firm, but didn't want our kids too far apart in age. And so, you know, had our son within the first year of starting our own company, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, no maternity leave, no PTO kind of thing. You're not working, you're not making money, which was stressful and scary. But, you know, we try to do what we like to do, and they're passionate, and also working, you know, in work or personal. It's like, well, if that's a club or an activity and the people there are not very, well, I don't want to use the word toxic, but maybe not the right type of people you want to hang out with. We're like, well, then let's maybe shift our goals and see where else we're at. You know, we love cooking. So, you know, we also have food allergies. So we cook a lot of our own food, cook from scratch kind of thing. You know, I always say if I can't read the ingredients, I don't want to eat it. And there's times that though that we have to go for our freezer meals. And also I've gotten into producing a lot of our own food kind of thing. So I've got 850 square feet of my main garden, vegetable garden, producing everything. And then we've got chickens. Then my daughter got into showing chickens for 4-H. So, you know, right now we've got 28 birds because the old ladies haven't gone away and we need the new ones ready for fair. You know, we also have two dogs because my daughter really wanted to do agility and our old dog couldn't do that. You know, we've got a piano because music's also important for our life. So my son plays the piano and just got accepted to percussion. So our house just got even louder. You know, he sort of found his passion in karate. So it's, you know, getting him to that, which is a totally new world for us of that area. We're not a sports family, so we don't have to worry about softball and volleyball tournaments kind of thing. But, you know, just trying to balance everything. You know, our biggest thing is we try really hard to always eat dinner together as a family every night, no matter if it's work meetings, volunteering meetings, you know, whatever we have going on, which means sometimes it might be 8 o'clock at night before we're sitting down. You know, the joke is that we're at the table before 8 o'clock and many times it's, you know, 7:59. Through all of that, my daughter's new joke is that we're held together with hopes, prayers, and duct tape. So, you know, we do have a religious side of things of taking faith and moving forward from that. So it's really trying to make sure all your boxes are checked of things you want to do and learn. There are times we have to sort of check and balance everything and be like, we just can't do all of this. So we need to pick what's high priority. And, you know, and that comes with work too. It's like sometimes we've had to pass on some projects because we just don't have the bandwidth to get it all done. And that's, you know, sometimes it works out. It's a blessing in disguise kind of thing that, you know what, it didn't work out to work with this person. And, you know, I think it was a good decision that we didn't do that. You know, there sometimes that subconscious of like, something's not quite right with whatever it is in life, you know, follow that gut instinct. So, and, you know, one day at a time, sometimes looking too far ahead causes some anxiety.
I do appreciate that you are that honest with clients as you're taking them on, that you've got a good idea of how long projects take you and you do seem to schedule them out. And I don't know if that's something maybe I just struggle with or if it's something more small firms struggle with, but that idea of phasing and that idea of building up a runway, because you're afraid a client's going to run away if you say yes, but not yet, or if you give them an honest timeline. And it seems like that's something that you never shy away from. You're always straightforward with folks.
It took a while. We promised the moon. And then it's like, I need to be honest that it's going to be 30 to 60 days before we can touch your project. And, you know, I want to say 95% of them say, okay, you know, and we try to leave a little wiggle room in the schedule for those quick burns that come in. But yeah, communication is amazing. What that does across the board kind of thing. But definitely, I would say it was really scary at first to say, yes, but it's going to be a while. And we've been fortunate enough that we've had projects that can wait until we're available. You know, I try to get a lot of the pre-stuff done. So when we got an opening, because then I tell them too, I'm like, you know what? Something could go on hold and we could move forward with you sooner. So let's get the front end stuff done so we're able to jump on it when your time comes in the queue.
That's awesome. That's a great way to manage it too. Again, just an amazing manager, Andrea. I love hearing this.
Thank you.
Well, is there anything else you want to leave us with? Any other advice? This has been a very rich conversation full of information. But are there any final words you'd like to leave folks with?
Yeah, you know what? Have fun with life and always learn and be humble.
I love it. That's leaving it on a high note. Always have fun with life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Andrea. This has been a lot of fun.
Yes, thank you.
Andrea Hamel-Wolak embraces entrepreneurship. Like a raven, nevermore will she fear going after the unknown. When signs of the 2008 recession loomed ahead, she assessed the situation and strategized, starting her own architecture business and a food truck while times seemed slow. But how did she move forward without fear? Some may think starting your own business is the beginning of the end, like a raven over a doorway. They fear an omen calling for the death of their career, or at least the death of a stable paycheck. Andrea just set to work, applying the principles of entrepreneurship that she saw in her own family. And I'll summarize it so we can all remember the advice of her father to be good, collaborate, and have fun. So first and foremost, remember, every good business relationship begins with a small act of kindness. This was said by Bob Berg and John David Mann in The Go-Giver. It is about being a good person and doing good work. What does being a good person matter for your business? In the Flying Solo movement, I'm talking with small firm architects to uncover how their business and marketing strategies reflect their unique personalities, their strengths, their lifestyle. Because I have found that building a business that leverages my strengths is easier than fighting my natural tendencies. You lose a lot of momentum on your projects if you are constantly struggling to fit a different business model. So doing good work is made easier when you are working on yourself, when you are being the good person, when you genuinely care for your clients and the outcomes of your projects. It is aligning your energy because it is more fun to work on things we care about. And that good comes out of the end result in the detailing and the design of your project. I've never heard an award-winning architect say they didn't care about that flashing detail. So it starts within us. It starts by being better people and recognizing what we are good at, which is paired with the next point. We can't know everything. So sometimes the smartest thing we can do is admit that and find someone who does know. That means collaborating with people who have strengths to complement our own. Like the raven calling out to a pack of wolves to take down some prey so that they can enjoy a meal. Andrea has very strategically built a network of partners to collaborate with. She is one of the best communicators I've ever met, always responding promptly to emails with quick and thoughtful responses. She keeps the ball rolling all the time because she can't solve every problem. And when she can't solve your problem, her best strategy is to connect with someone who can. She stays fully engaged in every project she takes on. And it means that some projects need to wait for their turn in the pipeline. But when they are up and in front of her at her desk, they are going, and she applies technical skill and precision to complete her projects so well. And her team members see that. It's what leads contractors to refer her to other clients because she is engaged and she has fun with every project, which leads to our final point. If you aren't having fun, then you need to change it. Strategize. Use the tools available to you. There's an old Aesop fable telling of a raven who couldn't drink water from a jar. The water was too low for its beak to reach, so the raven dropped pebble after pebble into the jar to raise the water level so that it could enjoy a fresh, cool drink. Consider what pebbles or resources you have at hand that will make it possible for you to enjoy a project. Do you need a different software to make the window assessment easier? Do you need to hire another company to scan the existing building and kick the project off faster? Or do you need to negotiate with the client to add additional services so that you have enough fee to complete the project well? There are many different ways to have fun with the work we do. So if you aren't enjoying it, why not mix it up? Andrea's story is a reminder that entrepreneurship doesn't always mean going bigger or louder. She's built a satisfying career and successful business by staying sharp and smart, refining her business to do good, work with others, and have fun. Because when your business strategy is fueled by your heart, your creativity can truly take flight. Season 2 of the Flying Solo podcast is sponsored by the Minnesota Architectural Foundation, whose mission is to invest in excellence, leadership, discovery, and equity within the profession of architecture. To join the Flying Solo movement, visit the website flyingsolo.live. That's flyingsolo.live for links to our Instagram, Substack, and the Wingbeat newsletter, a weekly dose of birdspiration and practical tips to help you grow your business and your confidence as a solopreneur architect. While you're there, take the bird quiz to discover which bird best matches your solopreneur style. For even more resources and encouragement, you can find all the Flying Solo episodes on the Gable Media platform at gablemedia.com. That's gablmedia.com, the premier destination for podcasts about architecture and design. And if you're looking for community, connection, and real conversations, check out the Entree Architect Network at entrearchitect.com. There's a link in the show notes. Whether you join one of their masterclasses or the free Facebook group, you'll find a community of small firm architects sharing ideas, challenges, and wins, proving that while we may work solo, we're never alone. As Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, says, it's all about doing better practice and better work every day. Thank you for listening to Flying Solo. I'm Katie Kangas, and my hope is to empower you, aspiring architects and creative entrepreneurs, to soar to new heights and embrace the freedom of flying solo.